Daniel for leading the Thomas song, and it fit for Lord's Supper, so I'm glad that you did that. It's not a difficult parable to understand. It's not shrouded sometimes in us having to interpret and figure out what it is. It's very straightforward, and it's answer to a question that I think we probably all have had. Every time I come up to a corner on a street, and there's somebody there, and they're asking for help, I don't help very often. I mean, I'm just frank with you, because I fear that they're druggies, they're alcoholics. I'm not helping them by giving them money. They're going to not use it for things they need. But sometimes I wonder to myself, could I hand them a McDonald's card? And they may trade that for, you know, drug money to somebody else. Or maybe I ought to carry peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with me and just do what I can to help people. I always wonder about that. Maybe you can help me afterwards and tell me how you think it. And maybe it is that we think too much. Maybe that's the problem. It's a two-pronged question that was asked to Jesus. What do I need to do to inherit eternal life? That's interesting when you think about it, because Jesus says, do this and you'll live. And we all know, the Bible says very clearly, nobody's kept the law. Nobody's done it perfectly. That's the book of Galatians. I mean, it's the curse. It's on us. And so wrapped up in that is already a problem in the answer. But that's not really what this is all about, because the guy wanting to justify himself said, who is my neighbor? So the lawyer answered the first question, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and soul and mind. Love thy neighbor as thyself. Jesus said, do it. That's correct. So who's my neighbor? So that is the parable. J.C. Ryle, who wrote in the 1800s, a favorite commentator of mine, it's almost like he lives in our time, but he says this, selfishness is the leading characteristic of the great majority of mankind. That cheap charity which costs nothing more than a trifling contribution is common enough. But that self-sacrificing kindness of heart, which cares not what trouble is entailed, so long as good can be done, is a grace which is rarely met with. Well, let's talk for a minute then about what he had compassion on him, he was moved. So let's talk about what compassion is not. Compassion is not academic. It's always action. We think too much, as I said a minute ago. The lawyer is saying, I don't know who my neighbor is. That's amazing. You're a student of the law of Moses. How do you indict yourself? I mean, it's like Jesus saying to Nicodemus, you know, are you a student? Are you a law? You know, have you been in the law all of your life and you don't know what I'm talking about? Mercy is always action. It always is. If the lawyer had truly loved his neighbor, as that second command said that ties into this, then he would have been doing merciful things for others. We cannot just be students of mercy. Here's my problem. Maybe it's yours too. I read about it. I applaud it when I see it. But when all is said and done, am I merciful? And that is always measured by action. Mercy is not a textbook. It is done by doing. It's not abstract. It's not loving the world. You know, we can speak of it in those terms. And yet it's always real people. What he tells is a story about a guy that's half beaten to death, lying on the side of the road, and these three different characters stop and have to consider what they're going to do. That's me and that guy on the side of the road, right? Or it's more specific than that sometimes. We have a chance to help orphans in a long place far away from us, and what do we start doing? Well, how do I know if the money's going to go to them? And what if we're being taken and fleeced? And that's so far away. Let's help in America. You ever thought like that? And so we do that. Real people come across our paths. What do we do about it? This happened often on the road between Jerusalem and Jericho. It was a great place for thieves to ambush those passing by. Jerome, a century later, has called it the Bloody Way. It was called the Bloody Way. Jerusalem is 2,300 feet above sea level. Jericho is 800 feet below sea level. So I want you to imagine that climb, and here's what it looks like. This is the ascent of Adumim, if I'm pronouncing that right. the Wadi Kilt, which is that deep crevice. Wadis were dry riverbeds that filled up. You can imagine when gushing of rain came down on this land, how it had to find its way down to the Jordan River into the Dead Sea. That's Jericho at the bottom, modern Jericho. But as you look at this, you can see how the ascent would be. That's the modern road that follows pretty much the kind of path. I don't know if it exactly follows it, but it would have been a path very similar to that. Probably follows it like a lot of roads are built over roads that used to exist as the wagon ruts. And that Wadi Kilt, you can imagine there are places all in it where guys can hide out. Where they have oases of water that gather in pools and they have everything they need. They're just waiting up and down that trail from Jericho to Jerusalem. They're only 17 miles apart. I want you to stop and think about it. That's from here to Siloam Springs, rising from 800 feet below sea level to 2,300 feet above sea level. So you think of that windy, curvy road and the deep crags and crevices and the narrow gorges. Jesus refuses to let any of us think about this guy abstractly. You can't do mercy generally. It's something you do specifically. And so how much do we care? Compassion is not afraid. Verse 31 says to us, now by chance a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on those sides. What do you think he was thinking? He'd be thinking what I'm thinking. That guy's bait. If I stop and get down on my donkey and I don't hurry on, then I'm going to be helping him. I'm stooped down and somebody's going to come down on me. They're in hiding and they're just waiting for me to take my eyes off of danger. And then I'm the real victim. And they'll steal everything I've got and so forth. The priest saw the wounded man and he passed by. There were 24 teams of priests to manage the temple complex in the day of Jesus. Each team was allowed to serve for only 2 weeks per year. That's all you ever saw, action. Imagine that with Aaron and his sons, how much action they saw. But as time went on, more and more priests, more and more descendants. So 12,000 priests lived in Jericho. And so the defilement would come. If I touch, what if he's dead? I mean, he didn't know. He comes by, sees the guy. So if he touches him, what does that do to him and serving at the temple? You know the passage, Numbers 19:11. Whoever touches the dead body of any person shall be unclean 7 days. Remember those guys that had done what God said about a dead body and then couldn't take the Passover and came to Moses and complained, why are we forbidden? We did what God said. So Moses found out and God gave a second chance for the Passover. But there's one huge problem with that scenario. I want you to notice that Luke is very topographical. Have you ever read Acts and noticed? It's going up to Jerusalem. It's going down because Jerusalem is high. It's 2,300 feet. And you imagine what it looked like. You saw the pictures a minute ago. And so if you drop down with me into the text, and the man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. What does that mean? Going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. Mean that he's already done with his temple service. And so the defilement argument doesn't work. Because if he defiles himself now, he's not going to prevent himself from serving at the temple. Sometimes in the commentaries, they'll miss that. But not many of them, but some of them do. And so it reveals his heart, doesn't it? It really reveals his heart. And John says to us, taking the words of Jesus and then putting them in other scenarios, 1 John 3:17-18, but if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, it closes his heart against him. There's our heart business. How does God's love abide in him? Little children, let us not love in word or talk, all abstract, but in deed and in truth, what we really do. Compassion is not analytical. Imagine, so likewise a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. I mean, I could give all kinds of excuses. I don't have time. I mean, have you ever had that happen? I mean, literally. I've had times where I can't stop and help somebody. They've got a flat tire, whatever. It's something less than what we're talking about here. But simply because if I don't make this meaning, it's something I can't miss. It's doctor's appointment. I've got to meet with somebody about something that's serious. My family's with me. We often think about that immediately because it's one thing to put yourself at risk, quite another to put, you ever had somebody by the side of the road at night, that kind of scenario, and so you're afraid to do that? And what if it was a time in my life when I looked and he's a different race than me, and that's what's going on here, Jew and Samaritan. Religious work does not make one holy. It's the heart that God wants. It's the heart that he's looking for. So he said to those Pharisees on one occasion, if you had known what this means, is this Hosea? This is Hosea. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. You would not have condemned the guiltless. So compassion is action in all shades and colors. And in this, God picks a Samaritan. Jesus picks a Samaritan. I want you to think in the Jewish mind who's having to listen to this. The Samaritans are the descendants of that mixed race of pagans and Jews that were left after the Assyrians had carted everybody off and then brought all those nations in 2 Kings 17 and following those verses. The Samaritans were prohibited from coming to Jerusalem and worshiping at the temple, so they built their own temple on Mount Gerizim. Remember Mount, Ebram and Gerizim? I've got it wrong, but anyway, those two mountains, remember where Joshua uttered the curses and the blessings when they entered the land. And it was destroyed by the Jews in 128 B.C. They set out and they were going to take care of it and they tore it down. The Samaritans got back to them. Josephus says that they were accused in 6 B.C. of secretly entering the Jewish temple during the Passover and strewn human bones. Can you imagine? Put human bones inside the temple and what that would have done to defile the Passover. So a good Jew traveling to Jerusalem, you remember his disciples when they were going to go through Jerusalem? Through Samaria to get to Jerusalem? And they were always used to crossing the Jordan and going way around Samaria and coming in. No, Jesus, that's John 4 and the woman at the well. They're going to go smack right through Samaritan territory because Jesus didn't live by our rules. He lived by God's. Think of the actions the Samaritan took to aid this man. He didn't think. He just saw a man that was in desperate need. And he got off his donkey, his schedule and his time. Was he going somewhere? Was something he needed to do? And he went to the man and he didn't think about, I'm sure it maybe crossed his mind, he could be bait. Maybe he's watching as he's doing it, not to just be foolish. But at the same time, he's going to help that man if he truly is a man that has been besieged by bandits, as it looks like. He takes the time to bandage his wounds. He has to get cloth and the things that he may have to tear to make that. And he applies medicine and soothing oil. Though they did not know about germs, they had understood something about the fact that wine poured on an open wound helped it in its healing. And then they poured on the oil to help it and soothe it and make it pliable. Then he loads him on to his beast and brings him to an inn along that way. And he takes out 2 denarii, which we'll talk about in a minute, was a lot of money. And he says to the innkeeper, if I owe you any more, you take care of him. If I owe you any more, I'll pay you when I come. Compassion is about what we see and about what we act on. The priest, the Levite, and the Samaritan, all three, it says, looked. They saw the same set of circumstances. But it's only the Samaritan that truly saw and acted on that. He was filled with compassion. I think of Jesus when he went ashore, saw a great crowd, and had compassion on them and healed their sick. And then Mark 6:34, when he went ashore and saw a great crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach, whether it was to heal them and their sick or to teach. Jesus was always moved by compassion to do something. The Samaritan acted because he saw. Don't we teach ourselves not to see those guys? Okay, I want you to think about it. I drive out of that corner and I try to not have eye contact. The other day when it was so cold, remember, it seemed like the wind was blowing like 36, 40 mile an hour when I was leaving Tulsa. There was a girl with a coat on, had it on, and she's just standing there at the corner. I didn't do anything.
pull up to a stoplight is to avoid all contact. They're going to come up to my car window. David, I was asking him about it, staying with a friend of mine for a funeral, and I was talking about that, wondering about it, thinking about this lesson, and he said, you go to Ethiopia, and if they see you're white in a car, they know that you've come from another nation, and they know you have wealth. Now, that doesn't mean you have lots of money, but what it is in comparison to them is untold wealth. And so they come to the windows, and David said, they're like this, holding little babies in their arms, looking like the people sometimes that we see in the pictures. They're not starving to death, but they don't have things like we have. And sometimes it may be that they're very hungry. The most generous people on earth are often not the most wealthy. Elites, I'm talking about the ones that are way high up, give their gifts to university colleges, foundations. They set all that up, and sometimes they do for philanthropic, is that the word? To do good for others. But as somebody almost noted is, they almost never do anything for the helpless, the really helpless, the homeless, for instance. One writer in Explanation said, why would they give to people they never see? Because of their wealth, they're able to wall themselves off from homeless people, the wretched, and those people they never encounter in life. I pass down a road to go to my house. I pass a subdivision that's totally walled off, has gates, and so to get into it, you have to punch the code to open it and get in and come out. And I'm thinking to myself, is that what we do? Is that where we choose to live? You probably live behind a wall compound somewhere, so I'm not getting on to you. All I'm saying is that our attitude? Is that our life? What we don't see, we never act upon. Listen to these words from Proverbs. Proverbs 21:13. Whoever closes his ear to the cry of the poor will himself call out and not be answered. Compassion is about what we do. Love always risks. Genuine love always involves risk. Mercy is not about what we feel. It's about what we do. Somebody's counted up, and I didn't actually do this, but the Samaritan performed 8 or 9 different acts of mercy, different items, if you just were to tally them out. Mine, I would have said, I'll call 911, and they'll send somebody back there to help. Well, that's doing something, right? It's helping. I understand that. It's avoiding the fact that it could be a dangerous situation I'm entering. Maybe the police and others need to tend to that. But I think sometimes that's not why I do that. Risky thing to talk to a neighbor about sin, grace, and Jesus. We challenge the good relations with the fence. I can't be that guy that used to talk, what was that the name of that program? He always, only this much you saw the fellow over the fence, you know, his neighbor. Because if I bring up Jesus to him and I start talking to him about his soul, now I risk everything. Because if the guy doesn't have any interest in Jesus, then maybe he's going to hate me and we're not going to get along well. It's risky to go to a fellow believer that we see not coming. They're just not attending. They keep not attending. And it's hard to go to them and say, I'm worried about you. I'm worried about your soul. Because, boy, you can drive a permanent wedge. Ask any elder. Worth their salt. Ask any disciple worth their salt. And most people, folks, including myself, are cowards. We never will risk anything. Compassion is about how we do it. And it's always, it seems to be, where it's ugly. Verse 36, 37. Which of these do you think proved to be neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? You start helping people and going into the messy situations of life. Ever had someone help you when you're sick? When Jonathan was born, we had all the trouble with him, and there was all kinds of folks coming and doing different things. There was a phrase that I heard that Will and I would talk about, and we promised ourselves that we wouldn't do this. I'm not saying we never have we failed, we've done it. Call us. Call us if you need anything. You ever heard somebody say that? Do you know what they really mean by that? Don't call us. Don't call us, because I really am not going to help you. Because here's a person that'll help you. It's just the one that goes and does it. They don't call. They just do it. One day we looked up in the hospital. Jonathan's having major surgery, brain surgery, going to have to go under the knife. We're all worried. And a friend of mine, Don Truex, just came walking through the door. He had boarded a plane in Houston at his expense and flew to Dallas. He knew we were having that. I didn't know he was coming. He gets off the plane, gets a taxi, comes to the hospital room. Another very beloved brother. Somebody that I would count as a mentor, somebody that I would have thought highly, highly of, gave the other phrase. Well, you know what will come if you need us, which was neighbor to me. I think we understand the difference. Mark 1, verse 40 and 41, the leper came to him, imploring him, and kneeling said to him, "If you will, you can make me clean." Moved with pity. But never stopping there. I mean, there's where I stop so many times. He stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, "I will be clean." You imagine touching a leper, what that meant. Compassion then finally is about how much it cost us. And we show mercy no matter what it cost us. In time, in money, in postponed schedules and priorities, true mercy does not weigh the cost first. It just responds. Eyes that saw that terrible beaten man. Heart instantly moved to compassion. A beast to carry the injured man to safety. Feet to walk along the path and lead the animal to the inn. Hands to bandage and pour the oil and wine to carry the man to the beast and lift him off the beast and carry him to the bed in the inn. And then to sit by him until the next day where he could take money. Generously, David Wenham in the Parables of Jesus says, 2 denarii was enough money in that day to pay for 24 nights at an inn in that day. We cannot be compassionate without it costing us often much. Never worry about the cost. We're not going to take any of this stuff with us. Do mercy. Let the cost be what it may. What did it cost God to come and die on the cross for us? For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. So here I'll leave you with this phrase. I hope you'll say it this week. I hope you'll wake up every day. I hope you can't escape it. And that phrase be in your mind. Go and do likewise. Your subject, Heaven's Invitation, this evening Jesus said, "He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that believes not shall be condemned." If we can help you tonight to return to Him, you've walked away from Him as a child of God, then we bid you come as together we stand and sing.